You are listening to an exclusive podcast from Pituitary World News.
Hello, folks. This is Dr. Lewis Blevins of Pituitary World News, podcasting from Northern California. Today, I want to talk to you about the clinical symptoms and signs of growth hormone deficiency.
But first, let me share a perspective with you that I've been able to see over my career. When I was in my fellowship training and for the first few early years of my faculty practice, we did not treat patients with growth hormone. We treated hypopituitarism with standard hormone replacement and were not using growth hormone regularly in our patients until it was approved in about 1998. And interestingly, at that time, we had patients that we were absolutely certain we had on full and appropriate hormone replacement. And yet patients would come to the clinic and say, you know, I take my medicines, you tell me my hormone levels are perfect, but something is not right. I am not myself. Here are my problems. These are the issues. What can we do to fix them? And retrospectively, now having treated hundreds and hundreds of patients with growth hormone who have growth hormone deficiency, I can tell you without a doubt, most of those patients early in my career and during my training were suffering from growth hormone deficiency and needed growth hormone replacement to be able to feel well and carry out their activities of daily living.
Another thing that's important to keep in mind is that the symptoms and signs of growth hormone deficiency vary from patient to patient. They also vary in severity that depends in large part on the severity of the growth hormone deficiency, but more importantly also the duration of growth hormone deficiency, and in my view, the underlying pathophysiology of their disease state and also a multitude of other genetic disorders or concerns. For example, a patient who has a genetic profile that leads to metabolic syndrome is more likely to develop some of the obesity and other symptoms and signs of growth hormone deficiency than a patient who does not. And that's a clinical observation that you won't see anywhere in the literature.
One other caveat that I'll share with you is that we have learned an awful lot about growth hormone deficiency by actually treating patients who had growth hormone deficiency and studying what gets better and what doesn't, and sort of retrospectively looking at what was ailing the patient and learning what has improved with treatment as far as symptoms, signs, and different measures of biology. So that's been a very interesting process for me to see that over time as well. And I'll share some of that with you here in just a moment.
And the last thing I want to say before we do so is that the symptoms and signs of growth hormone deficiency are relatively and seemingly nonspecific. In other words, you could look at a family practice physician's practice and find that probably 75% of his or her patients that particular clinic day had one or more symptoms and signs of growth hormone deficiency.
But those symptoms and signs of growth hormone deficiency were related to some other disease process. So one of the things that we have to do as endocrinologists or physicians who practice pituitary disease is treat people for growth hormone deficiency if they really truly have growth hormone deficiency, regardless of symptoms or signs. So we can't allow patients to come to us and say, I have all these textbook symptoms and signs of growth hormone deficiency, but my stimulation test was normal, and I want growth hormone anyway. It just doesn't work that way, and that's what diagnostic testing is all about. If you listen to another podcast, I talked about diagnostic testing, but we have to have the correlation between the underlying disease process, the symptoms and signs, and the proof in the pudding of the diagnostic tests that prove that the patient actually has the hormone disorder before we can actually justify treatment, and especially to third-party payers and the FDA.
All right, with all of that said, let's talk about the clinical symptoms and signs of growth hormone deficiency. I would have to say that over the years, the number one symptom or sign that my patients have presented with is that of fatigue. If you dig deeper, you find that what they're really talking about is easy fatigability or exercise intolerance. And
this can happen for a number of different reasons, including impaired cardiac reserve in growth hormone deficiency, the blood doesn't carry oxygen as efficiently in growth hormone deficiency, and of course, patients have a decreased muscle mass and a decreased muscle strength with growth hormone deficiency.
If one were to actually measure lean body mass, it goes down with growth hormone deficiency. And then fat mass increases because growth hormone is lipolytic. You see basically this change in body composition where there's a gain in fat mass and a loss of lean mass. Patients report these other things in addition to the easy fatigability. They notice that their muscles decrease in size and they notice their strength is down. And they also notice that their dress size is bigger, or their belt size for their jeans is larger, for example, in men.
Studies have showed that patients with growth hormone deficiency also have and report poor sleep. They become more socially isolated and spend more time at home and less time interacting with friends. Studies looking at work attendance have showed they have markedly decreased work attendance or missing more days from work for illness or sickness or what have you. Patients often report that they have a brain fog or memory problems or difficulty performing computational tasks such as balancing a checkbook and remembering where they're supposed to be, managing their schedules, etc. Silently, behind the scenes, patients can have decreased bone mineral density and even frank osteoporosis. There's an increased number of fractures in hypopituitary patients, and there's an increased fracture risk based on the actual bone density. Children obviously have short stature, but they also have osteoporosis relative to their bone age.
Hypoglycemia is rare, but it can occur, especially in patients who also have cortisol deficiency, because growth hormone improves or increases hepatic or liver glucose output in the early morning hours by increasing glucose production and breakdown of glycogen.
There are a number of things that happen in the bloodstream and in the blood vessels that actually increase cardiovascular risk in patients with hypopituitarism. I mentioned the body composition changes before, and that abnormal body composition has been associated with our cardiovascular risk in an independent nature. But also there are various inflammatory markers and circulating factors such as PAI-1, CRP, and lipids that all go in the wrong way in patients with growth hormone deficiency. Furthermore, the middle layer of blood vessels is thicker in patients with growth hormone deficiency, and this can also lead to an increased cardiovascular risk.
I addressed mortality issues in another podcast and won't recount that information here.
So that's a brief overview of growth hormone deficiency and the symptoms and signs that we pay attention to clinically. One other thing, and I mentioned this before, but I want to reiterate it at this time, is that the duration of growth hormone deficiency does play a role. So, for example, I see patients who have newly acquired growth hormone deficiency after pituitary surgery, and they have none of the symptoms and signs that we're talking about. And you can offer them treatment. Some of them start treatment. Others say, I don't have any of that. I'll be fine. I don't want treatment. And they're back in the office 6 to 12 months later saying, you know, I have all these things now, so I'm interested in treatment. And, of course, patients who have chronic growth hormone deficiency have the full-blown syndrome. So it's important to keep that in mind as you go through the course of your evaluation and management with your primary endocrinologist or pituitary endocrinologist, is to recognize that like any other disease process or illness, growth hormone deficiency can be new, intermediate, or chronic in its duration, and that can affect the clinical syndrome, the symptoms and signs, and the severity of the tests, and may affect the need for treatment. But I also feel that growth hormone replacement in those who are newly diagnosed, it's preventive medicine. It prevents you from falling apart and developing that full-blown clinical syndrome of growth hormone deficiency. So it's worth considering treatment, even if you're a newly diagnosed growth hormone deficient person. Well, that's all for this podcast. In a future podcast, I'll be talking about the things that happen when we start growth hormone. And then a subsequent one, we'll also talk about initiating treatment and what to expect as you navigate that process with your treating physician. So once again, Dr. Lewis Blevins of Pituitary World News, thank you for listening and have a wonderful day.